is Susan Robb for Teachers for a New Era. I'm talking with Avi, who's the renowned author of nearly 60 books translated and published around the world. He won the Newbery Medal for Crispin, the Cross of Lead, and two Newbery Honors for The True Confessions of Charlotte Doyle and a book called Nothing But the Truth. So, Avi, thanks for talking with me. You've been writing for more than 30 years. You've had many, many awards. When did you realize that you wanted to be a writer?
I made up my mind to be a writer, actually, when I was in high school, when I was 17 years old, as a senior in high school. At those days, I wanted to be a playwright. I was going to be a big Broadway playwright. And I went on to write lots and lots of very bad plays. And then only subsequently then I began to think about what I could do a little bit better than those plays that I wrote, and eventually got to writing books for young people, primarily because I had kids of my own, I think.
And did you start out writing for children?
Not the plays. The plays were adult plays, for Broadway, if you will. But when I started writing for young people, it was immediately for young people. Thinking first of my own kids and my own experience as a reader as a kid, but relatively quickly moved towards writing novels for young people, and that's really what I've been doing, with a few exceptions, ever since.
I mentioned that you write in many styles. Do you know what the style will be when you start, or is that something that evolves over time?
Well, usually when I sit down to write a book, I have a general idea what I'm doing, but I sort of experiment and try to figure out what's the best way to tell the story that engages me and will engage my readers. But I don't set out to be experimental or unusual. It's all at the service, if you will, to the story. But I'm just simply not wedded to one format or idea. And sometimes I'll write a book, it's usually in the first 30, 40 pages that I do all that experimentation. Should I tell it first-person narrative? Is there another technique that I want? Should it be short paragraphs, short chapters or something like that? The pace of the book, the voice of the book, it takes me a while. And then once I establish that, I just go with that.
Have you had characters that that have surprised you in terms of, like, who your voices are?
Well, there's a wonderful comment that the poet Robert Frost made that I love to remind myself. He said, if there are no surprises for the writer, there are no surprises for the reader. So it's, in fact, the way I work. I evolve the story and the character and the development. You take a character like Aerith from the Poppy books, and kids really love him and the way he speaks. And how did you decide to do that? Well, I wish I could remember, in the sense that he was a character, but probably drawn in opposition to the personality of the main character, Poppy, who's very sweet and gentle, but forceful in her way. And it was the juxtaposition of her character that created this loud, grumpy, but sweet, essentially sweet character, emerged in contrast to her. That's not a very complex formula, but that's probably the way it evolved.
Do kids have, you're out talking to kids a lot. Are there certain characters who kids talk to you about a lot or ask you about a lot?
Well, there's certainly that character I just mentioned, the character Aerith, because they love the way he talks, which sounds like he's swearing, but he's actually just using funny words. They ask about Charlotte from True Confessions of Charlotte Doyle. They ask about the character Bear in Crispin. I would say that's more. The character from Nothing But the Truth, Philip, they ask about. The popular books are popular in part because there's a character that's interesting or attractive or effectively portrayed so that kids sort of glom onto them and they want to know about them. And the way kids tend to read is they absorb books as experience. So, you know, what happened to Charlotte, what happens to Poppy, what happens to Bear, they extend their sense of the character beyond the borders of the story itself. And so they went, what happens to them? How did he come to be that way? And these are often questions I have no idea, of course. But that's what they the way they ask that.
Do you have the thing with your characters? I mean, do they live for you beyond the book? I've on occasion, you know, either heard authors talk or talked to authors where they'll say, you know, I know what they eat for breakfast. I know the toothbrush, you know, the kind of toothpaste they use.
No, I don't react that way. I don't have that kind of detail in my own head. But you do get a sense of the characters. I mean, my favorite example of that is in True Confessions of Charlotte Doyle. Let's see if I can explain this. The book was written, and then my editor called up and said we missed a logical piece of the story. When Charlotte leaves the boat, she will come back eventually, but we don't know that. The reader doesn't. And she needs to go around and say goodbye because effectively she thinks she's really leaving. And so the very last thing that I wrote of that book was about a two-page scene in which she goes around saying goodbye. And as I was writing this, all of a sudden the tears came to my eyes because I was saying goodbye to her too. And so you get very caught up in your characters in that way. And I can't say that I know what that toothpaste is, but you do get a sense of them. They become, in a funny way, like family, sort of the missing uncle or something like that.
It's interesting, you know, the relationships I think people have with us. Tell me, do you think, or maybe how do you think, the children's literature field has changed or evolved over the years? Because you've both, you know, studied it, you've collected. So what are your views on it?
Well, it has changed. It's changed for a variety of reasons. Sometimes it's because in the world of education and the realm of education, the way teaching is taught, the way teaching takes place, has a great deal to do with the way books are used in the classroom, in schools. We now are in a period of time in which reading is very restrictive. The child, No Child Left Behind, the way it effectively works in the schoolroom is that books tend to be used as texts and they're tested and so forth and so on. So that changes the whole approach to reading. There have been other styles and approaches in the past. So that affects teaching methodology and theory affects the way books are used a great deal. Then, you know, then there are trends and developments. I mean, we live in a time, it's not quite so much as it was a few years ago, fantasy. And sometimes, you know, you equate, why are kids reading fantasy? Well, the world maybe with 9/11 seemed a more terrifying place. Maybe, and I don't mean it in a negative way, a more escapist kind of literature becomes more engaging. It's fun to think that you can wave your magic wand and solve the world's problems, and maybe that, you know, there's cause and effect there, I don't know. There are always these changes in literary fashion. I think the writing as a whole is superb and very rich. It's very varied. It's also changed in the sense that as film and television has become the predominant form of narrative structure that young people and adults deal with, the speed with which a story is told. One of my youngest kids, I used to say that his idea of a good story was five explosions connected by a chase. And sometimes, so when you write, you have to think of that kind of change. I remember once a letter from a kid saying, I read your book, it was so boring in the beginning, but by the second page it really got good. Well, they don't give you a lot of time to establish a story, to make it exciting and so forth and so on. And the way books look, the way they're designed, the way they're written, they're all part of the culture as a whole, and there's a kind of fragmentary way we look at the world. An easy way to look at that is look at a film on television today and count within, say, 5 minutes how many times there's a cut, so that, you know, the camera image takes it, shifts your eye from place to place, and how many seconds a given visual moment is held on the screen. And then go back 40 years and watch a film and see how often that changes. And you'll see that the changes in the narrative jumps, or the visual jumps, I don't even know the terms for it, are extraordinarily faster than they used to be. And I think that affects the way we look at the world and experience the world, these major forms of media, and surely it affects narrative writing as well.
Just two more things. One about literacy. Obviously, that's a great topic of discussion now. You know, what does it mean to be literate, and where maybe we'd be going, or what are we best conveying to children?
Seems to me that what you want to provide for children is a sense of enlarged experience that can come from reading. If reading is simply perceived of as a lesson plan, an excuse to write a book report, you're going to fail the kids. What I tell teachers is that when you work with kids, if at the end of your time with them they have come to like reading more, you as a teacher have succeeded. If at the end of the term they want to read less, you have failed as a teacher. What kids need, I think, is a number of things. They need their own free choices. They need to find their own levels of work. They don't need to be at level, because kids find their own level of pleasure and enjoyment. They need to be have access to as many books as possible. One of the most powerful things that any teacher can do is learn to read effectively to a child, whether it's your own child or in a classroom. Being read to aloud is one of the most powerful reading experiences that all kids get. I often say to teachers who ask me, well, what can I do to help my kids write better and read better? I say, learn to read better yourself, and learn to read out loud every day in the classroom or at home, and you will radically enhance your child's or your student's pleasure in literature and reading. But essentially, what I like to think of is the reading experience, which is very much the way I enjoy. I enjoy reading because it enlarges my sense of the world and the experience. I'm not terribly analytical. Was that a well-phrased sentence, a paragraph? Oh, I mean, I notice those things, to be sure, and try to write them. But mainly, frankly, is it a good story? Am I engaged with it? Do I care about it? Do I want to go back to it? Do I think about it? That's essentially what it's all about.
And what about in a social or political realm? You've written about many historical periods in your books. And how do you view your work in the context of, you know, different things that are going on in our world, and what you'd like maybe for kids to pick up?
Well, I don't, there's an old gag, which doesn't make much sense anymore, about if you want to send a message, call Western Union. I guess these days you'd say, get on YouTube or something like that. But I don't try to consciously set up to create a message in my work. I mean, I have ideas, I have feelings about the way the world works. But again, it's embedded in a story. But to suggest, I certainly am affected by the world and how I think about it. In a recent book, or a book just about to be published called Poppy and Aerith, there's a forest fire, and it's caused by a drought. Now, people have already said to me who've read it, oh, you've got climate change involved. Well, in fact, I wasn't thinking about that as such. I live in Colorado where there are a lot of trees and forest fires are constant crisis and problem. So I just incorporate that. If it says something about climate change and the environment, well, good. I mean, that's really important. But I really don't set out to do a message. And yet, at the same time, I read a lot of history. I'm aware of history. I like to be well-informed. And how could it not affect my work in one way or another?
Lavi, thank you for talking with me. And we'll hope that people are looking for different of the books. And what is coming next that you can tell people about?
The next book, here we are in January 09. First book to be published this year will be Poppy and Aerith, which is the last of the Poppy book series, number 6. And then what is planned for the fall is a prequel to a previous book. I wrote a book called Midnight Magic, and this one is to be called Murder at Midnight. A little heavy title, but that's what it's called. And that's sort of a mystery and so forth, set in Renaissance Italy.
Thanks very much.
My pleasure. Thank you.